This is Pop Fiction Women. I'm Corinne.
I'm Kate, and we're complicated.
Blunt.
Total boss.
But sometimes a mess.
Opinionated.
But never boring.
And in this podcast, we're discussing the complicated women of the best books, TV, and movies.
Along with the complicated women behind the scenes. Warning, lots of spoilers ahead.
So come back when you're done.
Hurry up, it's starting. Broken Hearts Gallery. This is one you were pushing for.
Yeah, this is another Instagram find. Simpson Street, which is Kerry Washington's production company, plugged it and specifically mentioned Natalie Krinsky as the writer and first-time director, which is what caught my attention. So I was like, rom-com set in New York, so definitely intrigued. But I sent it to you, and I think we both were like, all right, we watched the trailer. So looks good. Like, we weren't really, I don't know.
At the time, we were heavily into I May Destroy You was just kind of wrapping up. And then we were also anticipating The Undoing, which we'd never followed through with. But there was a lot on our plate at that time, I think.
Yes, I think so. But I watched it. I loved it. I was a little nervous, though. I wanted to see what you thought. But then I ended up watching it again with my boys, as you know, because I like to see their thoughts. I'm not sure why. I think a 10 and a 13-year-old's boys are going to give me feedback on rom-coms. But it's part of their training. So then yes. By my second time, I even watched it a third time. As you know, I had to admit to you the other day. But each time, I loved it more and more. And I think it's because every time I just kept falling more in love with Geraldine Viswanathan as Lucy, who, of course, we're going to talk about.
Well, first of all, how could you not love? It's another When Harry Met Sally.
Yes, it is completely.
And that's our thing. I don't know why you didn't sell me on that part of it. I can't ever resist them. I mean, there's literal lines taken from When Harry Met Sally. Like, tell me your when she says to him, tell me your life story. And he's like, my life hasn't even started yet.
The confessionals.
Vignettes. This time, though, as opposed to When Harry Met Sally, these are their breakups as opposed to their meet cutes, which are a different spin on the same thing I happen to really love from When Harry Met Sally. Even down to him running at the end through the streets at the night of her big party. And he's running through the streets. It reminded me of Billy Crystal doing the same in When Harry Met Sally. So,
and how about after they sleep together and they're lying in the bed just staring up the ceiling? That was very similar to the after Harry and Sally. Only with Harry and Sally, it turned immediately awkward and this ended up turning cute.
Yes.
She's a huge fan of When Harry Met Sally. So these were very intentional. When we did Always Be My Maybe, you joked that apparently we had another criteria for picking things out, is it has to be a version of When Harry Met Sally.
When Harry Met Sally was our very first movie, and then every rom-com we did after that was a version of it. Sleeping with Other People, Always Be My Maybe, everything was a version of When Harry Met Sally, and now here we are continuing that streak.
Yes, we are. I love it. That's the OG. Yeah. So, should we talk about Lucy, our complicated woman? Is she complicated?
I mean, I would say yes.
Yes.
I think she's full of the kind of contradictions that I would call mixed messages, but that's just because I don't understand them. They're just not my flavor, but there's no doubt she's complicated. She, right from the get-go when she meets Nick, she doesn't listen to him when he's like, get out of my car, this is not an Uber.
I love that.
She fights with him about it, and then he brings her to her house, and she's pissed at him. And I'm like, what's wrong with you, woman? Like, literally, what is wrong with you? And then she does it again. She follows him to his hotel, and then she's like, oh my God, you're going to kill me. I'm like, you followed him.
That's exactly what he said.
Yes. What is wrong with you?
Yes.
And she breaks up with people and then holds on to the past. She's a pessimist in love, but an optimist in life. Yeah. She was very confusing in a wonderfully endearing way to me.
Yes. Endearing is the word that I probably have in here 10 times in my notes that I always think of. I think that's the perfect word. First, I should say, and you know this, but I have two boys, but Lucy was my girl's name for the girl I'm never going to have. And one of the reasons I wanted to use that name was because my absolute favorite childhood book is Anne of Green Gables, and it was written by Lucy Maud Montgomery. And my girl name was actually going to be Lucy Ann with an E.
Oh.
And I know. And two times I whiffed and didn't get that. But
yes,
when I saw, first of all, that her name was Lucy, I just think that was an immediate connection for me. But then I was thinking, I think some of the reasons I love this Lucy are because she has some of the attributes I loved in Anne.
Mm.
That, like, well, it's that spunky, quirky, like plucky heroine who speaks her mind, who's unabashedly herself no matter what, is also, though, industrious and ambitious. When I was thinking of the Lucy, it made me think of Anne of Green Gables, which is a high compliment.
Yes.
But I also think it was just the charisma that Geraldine Viswanathan brings to the part. I feel like she's sort of like lit up from the inside.
Yes.
Whenever she's on the screen, she has a very Bridget Jones kind of quality, which was another thing that Natalie Krinsky kind of modeled it on, like a Lucille Ball. But I think to your point, like, she does have contradictions. I mean, she's funny, but she's still wounded. You know, she calls herself broken at one point. And there's definitely some pain that she's hiding. And it's not just the wounds from these past relationships, secret phone calls, these vague references. So you know there's more going on there under the surface.
Absolutely. I mean, as far as a plot device, a secret is always such an important intrigue, point of intrigue. And this was, I really liked this aspect of it just for our podcast, because we introduced the idea of secrets in 28 Summers, right? How Mallory had this isolated relationship that was so consuming to her, but also such a small part of her actual life.
Right.
And so, and how that made her complicated. I thought that was very intriguing. Then in Happiest Season, we saw Harper pretending that she had a secret when really she was denying an authentic part of herself. But Lucy is really neither nor. It's a very personal piece of her heart. Mm-hmm. That she, yes, I think, rightfully protects. That is not something about her mother that she should just share with everyone freely. I think that's a fair thing to protect and only trust the right people with that information. And so I loved this little twist.
This secret was a good use of the secret, you're saying. I love that. You're right.
Yeah, I was totally in support of this.
Now, did you relate to Lucy?
No, but I will say, this is something I wanted to say when you were talking earlier about the charisma she has. I thought the trailer was really unfortunate, because for neither Lucy nor Nick, I feel like I didn't see it at all, which is so wrong. I mean, the movie, they both light up the screen, especially her, as you've said, and their relationship, they have so much chemistry. It just didn't come across the same way they did. I mean, really, truly, so much star power, so much charisma, so much chemistry between them. There wasn't even a shred of it in the trailer compared to what's on the screen.
This is a good point. This is for when our book that we're going to write becomes a movie. So you did not relate to Lucy.
No, but I liked her. I related to her as, like, meaning I was invested in her. I wanted to know what happened. It didn't take away anything from the movie for me.
Right. Well, it was like me with Cassie and the flight attendant. But I just thought this was funny because you had written to me, as you know, and you're like, so clearly you're Lucy. And I'm like, not really. I mean, I don't know what you're talking about. because like I said, I didn't relate to what I viewed as a big part of her, which is this collecting of old things from past relationships. Now, hers is really extreme.
Yes.
And with having all that stuff in her room. And
as it should be in a movie.
Yes. I don't know what the Ziploc bags with shoelaces in them and whatnot. And I thought, oh, well, I don't do that, you know. And I said to you, oh, and I've never been dumped. And you're like, well, actually, I mean, it's not even that she gets dumped by Max, I guess. But yeah. That opening scene, you were right. I didn't notice that opening scene, which is supposed to be, you know, 8-ish years ago.
Right.
She's actually just telling her friends how she just suggested to whoever that guy was at the time that they take a break. And she's like, and he agreed.
Mm-hmm.
And oh my God, as you know, that exact thing happened to me in college with my boyfriend then. So what? Why do I think that I don't relate to this? I was like,
I don't know.
Yeah. I do have stuff.
I know.
I have letters and cards and photo albums. But I'm like, I thought everyone had that kind of stuff. Like not the weird stuff that she has, but you're telling me that that is not true.
You could go through every single thing I own. I have nothing that relates to any of my exes. None. Not my favorite ones. Not the ones I hate. Like none.
Right.
None. Right. I don't know. No, not never. I mean, I don't even keep cards like when we're dating. Like I just throw them away. Like what?
Really?
Like, yes.
I mean, I have cards from like 25 years ago and letters.
God, that's so weird.
And it's not. See, that's why I don't get the mementos thing.
Mm, I do get the memento. That is probably something I held on to for some period of time in my life where I was like, oh, like this concert that we went to, just it reminds me of an experience.
The tickets or something. Yeah. Yeah. And I like to remember what they said to me.
Yeah.
I love the words. That's why I have the cards and letters things.
Yeah.
Well, then I should ask you what Lucy asked Nick. When love crumbles, how do you preserve its ruins?
You don't.
You're like, it's over.
You don't.
I knew what you were going to say. You don't. It's ruined. It's over. There's nothing to preserve. I can already hear your answer.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'll have more to say about that, too.
I know. Damn it. Anyway, so my point is, after some reflection prompted by you, perhaps I am a little more Lucy than I thought.
Oh, that's so funny. Well, she is a Leo.
Well, I never would have picked up on that except for you said that you got it from the biographer. It was a hot day in August or something.
Yeah. And I mean, like, no joke, I honestly was watching the whole time and going, she is such a Leo. The end, forget it. The end is so incredibly, that literally couldn't be done by anyone besides a Leo.
Oh my God, this is why I love it. I love that end, by the way, so much. And we will definitely talk about that. But no wonder. You see, I didn't think that. I just thought, like, I don't know. You're right. There's a lot of similarities now that I think about it. Okay, so.
Yeah, well, I'm not even talking about the similarities between you and her. I'm just saying she is such a Leo.
Yeah, the personality traits of a Leo. Totally. Yeah. Oh, that is great. Yeah. I love it. Okay, well, before we do scenes, I mean, this is a really diverse and cast of, I think, some rising stars. I mean, Dacre Montgomery, the guy that plays Nick, but he was in Stranger Things and people love him from that. He sort of broke out in that. Max, you know, is from Pitch Perfect.
Yes, of course.
Philippa Sue. Hello. We have Eliza Hamilton in this. And this Molly Gordon, her other friend, was in Booksmart. And I think you didn't, haven't seen that. Mm-mm. And then Bernadette Peters, a star. Yeah. But I thought for me, these two, Nadine and Amanda, her friends, provided a lot of the comedy for me in this rom-com. That's where, I mean, so did Lucy, but I just love this portrayal of female friendship and that tough love aspect, because to me, that's like how I am with my friends.
Yeah.
And it did remind me of Booksmart, which I loved. And like I said, Molly Gordon was in that. But then I also saw that Booksmart, where they're portraying women as sort of going out of their way to be body positive, to have each other's back, but also call them out when necessary. And I think it's part of an effort on women writers' parts not to depict women as being at odds with each other or trying to take each other down.
I loved both of them, Nadine and Amanda. I thought they were very unique and refreshing and subversive characters. I didn't think they were particularly complicated. Like, they weren't fully dimensional.
Yes.
But they served their role and those relationships were very true. I mean, the murder-obsessed lawyer, fucking love that. It's brilliant. And then the lesbian, like
Lothario,
basically. Exactly.
Yes, totally.
I just thought those were such great ideas. I loved them. This is the kind of thing where you think, like, in a YA series, this would be first, and then you'd get Amanda's story, and then you'd get Nadine's story. Like, it would be a trilogy. I could see that. You could see that there's so much more behind them.
Great.
Yeah.
Yes, and you're right. We just don't get a lot. But what we get is so well drawn. I mean, when Amanda says to Max, like when he tries to come back to apologize, and she like basically tells Max you should apologize for using Lucy like his own personal sanitary napkin. Yeah. That she's like, that you bled in too heavily on your most heavy day, yeah, like that second day, you know. I'm like, and then she's like, we're bloody witches. Mm-hmm. And then she's like, and where are your socks? You look like an idiot. Like, I love it. Yeah. It's like everything. So funny, yes. Those guys. So, yeah. So we'll talk about them. But I thought that they were really well done.
Yes.
So scenes.
Yeah.
What is your first one?
My first one is pretty early on. I think it's what I'm calling the mutual call out.
I don't know what the mutual call out is.
So that's when she follows him back to the hotel. And yes, he's like, what are you doing? And she's like, what's going on with this hotel? And he's like, what are you even doing? What are you collecting? And he says, you collect these things in anticipation that the relationships will end. You're such a pessimist. And then she's like, well, what about you? You're that lone wolf. You're like, I don't need anyone, but you're really too afraid to get close to anyone. It sets them up right away. Like, mm-hmm, this is where we're going to see A, both of them grow, and then B, in these ways. These are the things they have to shed before they could, exactly, be together. So yes, I love that scene. I love
the mutual call out. Now, I have it. That's my first one, too. So I just didn't know what you were calling it. But I love that. That's actually perfect. I love that it starts first, though, right before it, with her, like, running around with like that garbage bag, like, yes, into a restaurant. Yeah. And she's just, it's just made me laugh out loud. I'm like, is she really walking around with like a giant garbage bag? And then that's when he calls her a hoarder. Mm-hmm. But that's also where he says, everyone leaves, disappoints, or dies.
Yes, I love that.
Right? Yeah. So to your point, like, that's where he's starting, yeah, from. Like, and she's like, okay, Mr. Rogers. Yeah. But that's when she does ask the question, when love crumbles, how do you preserve its ruins?
Yes.
And he's like, leave it here. Just let go. And that's when she, you know, finds the nail and sort of gets the idea for the Broken Heart Gallery. Mm-hmm. So I love that scene, too. I think it really does set the stage, yes, for the two of them and for the brainchild of the gallery.
I know. Do you know that it was a real thing? And that's where she got this idea,
yes,
from?
Ugh. In Croatia.
Yes. I think that's, I do love the idea. I really do.
Yeah. And she heard about it, Natalie Krinsky, right when she had a bad breakup, mm-hmm, and lost her job, yeah, and then heard that. So it all sort of gave the inspiration. But it is a real place. So my next one was the karaoke scene, but I bet that's yours
it
then.
Is.
Good. Okay.
I love everything about the scene.
First of all, I wrote, do we need a karaoke scene? Does this mean like now I'm so inspired by this one that I'm like, maybe we need a karaoke scene when we write our
own? Yes. Yes. I love a karaoke scene. I love karaoke. So it doesn't, yeah, surprise me.
Perfect.
But so I'll take any karaoke scene, but the murder karaoke birthday party, I mean,
yeah,
it could not be any more perfect. The concept, I love that they're singing the Ava Max song, Sweet But a Psycho.
She's sweet but my god, yes, perfect song choice.
I loved that. Mm-hmm. And then the way that he looks at her when they're singing, I mean, that was like, I'm like, this, he is such a fucking good actor, because unless he's actually in love with her, he really, truly looks like he's in love with her right now.
Oh, singing Don't Go Breaking, yes, My Heart. Again, like the song choices.
Yeah.
I love that scene.
Everything about it. I wish I could just.
When she says making a fool of oneself is one of life's greatest pleasures. And I was like, yes.
Yeah.
She is so earnest, too. It reminded me of what Julie Buxbaum was saying about Ted Lasso and what she loves. I mean, that's what I thought of with Lucy. But yeah, the chemistry there with those two in that scene.
Yes.
Awesome. But and with the friends. I mean, you kind of get the great friendship and them singing together with the Sweet But a Psycho. Mm-hmm. And you get him and her and their chemistry. I felt like in that one scene, you got all of,
yeah,
that.
No, I love it.
So I think my next one is a total cheat of like a lot of scenes put together.
Oh, boy. A cocktail for you? Okay. Yes.
Kind of.
Okay.
But I'm calling it like a series of scenes where Lucy starts to come into her own and take charge of her life, both professionally and personally.
Okay.
But this is basically where she finds out that Nick didn't get the loan and he's upset. And, you know, they kind of had this fight and he's like, she's like, we're in this together. And he's like, no, we're not. Like, I let myself get distracted. Take your stuff and get out of here. And she says she's not giving up. And that's when she starts trying to get a commitment from other people to help, you know, find this new space for the gallery. Like she said, I owe it to everyone who came in here with their heart on their sleeve. And so I don't know if that's past. No, actually, it leads into your one about.
I was
going to
say, I think yours is part of it. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It is. Okay. So then we'll get. Yeah. But that is part of it because that's how she gets herself together. Personally, I would say, but she realizes like she's going to do this herself and she starts calling, you know, all these galleries and seeing if they're interested. And I love her pitch too. Like, everyone's damaged. Have you ever had your heart broken? And then she finally gets Eva to take a chance on her. And she says, like, when you see talent, you grab it. And so she lets Lucy have the exhibit there. And I felt like that was Lucy, you know, coming into her own professionally. But then she realizes as part of that, personally, like, Max is not really her guy, right? So she has to learn how to actually break up with someone because she's always been the one kind of being a broken up with. So that's when she goes to Philippa Sue or Nadine to get advice, which I love. So you want to talk about that scene?
Yeah. By the way, I also love that I read a few interviews, obviously, for what she said with Natalie Krinsky, and they call her Pippa.
Ah.
Yeah, that's her. The insider name, I guess. So
I did love that.
No, I mean, I just loved her character, Philippa Sue's character. I thought she did it so well. I mean, it is the cliche that the guy who's so hurt and like is always hurting people does have a heart of gold. But somehow you do feel it. And I don't know if that's just Eliza Hamilton coming, like just like what you impute into her. But she really does seem to come across as like someone who just loves to be in love and then falls out of love and then falls in love again. It's like it's not intended to be hurtful or horrible or mean, but she just is who she is. I think now the character wasn't developed enough for me to say for sure, but I think I might have related to her the most.
I think I know where this is going.
Yeah, I mean, so first of all, back up one second. I was like, when we were talking about this movie, I was like, this is my worst nightmare. That there would be a place where I can imagine everyone who I'd ever come across has something to hang up in this broken hearts gallery of me. And Lucy says, here's the thing about breakups. Someone can ruin your life just by disappearing. And then you hang on to the hope that they'll come barreling through your door full of believable explanations as to why they stopped loving you. Which to me is just devastating. A lot of times there's no reason you start loving someone. There's really no reason you stop loving them. It's just kind of a thing. And now long-term relationships require work in addition to that feeling of love, and you can help maintain and perpetuate that feeling of love so that it doesn't go away. But the whole thing just set me so unnerved. I was like, I don't understand. I have no explanations. There are no explanations. What is it that you're looking for? Stop looking for it. Move on.
No, but because you're a person, you said, who doesn't care about closure or isn't, which I think a lot of people do. They want the explanation. They want sort of the summary of, okay, so here's what went wrong.
But I have a question. Has anyone ever gotten closure, not from internally, from the other person, and then like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Bye.
Well, I've gotten later in life explanations of, you know, I think sometimes what happens is a relationship ends and you think it was for a certain reason or this or that. And then later you realize that there were sort of misunderstandings or misinterpretations. And you're like, oh, like that's what you were thinking.
Yeah, but
oh,
that's not okay. Closure. Well,
but it's more the explanation kind of thing.
I had never had one in the arsenal the way that Pippa does here. Lucy comes to her and says, you know, I need to learn, teach me. And she comes out with, most stories are stories of betrayal, but ours is a story of hope. Hope that what we shared will guide you home. Thank you for being my home. I was like, Jesus, I'm a decade too late for having this one. I wish I probably could have done more for people if I had just given them that.
And I love that Lucy's like so engrossed. Totally. Like, oh my God. Like that. You're like, it's magic. Totally. What, you literally have the greatest breakup speech ever. And she's like, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. It's so good.
Mm-hmm. I loved it.
She's like, I can't use it.
Yeah.
But of course, because only Philippa, right?
Yes,
only
could a get out with that.
Like that can get away with it. But it was beautiful and perfect.
I loved it.
Oh, I loved it. But to finish out my little montage here is how then from that, she crafts her own with Max, you know, like she has to do it her own way after getting, I think, the inspiration and the support from Nadine. And when she says to Max, you're the hero in your love story and the villain in mine. And then it sort of closes out with Nick then coming to tell her that he miraculously got this private lender to back him. And she tells her story of how she got the gallery, you know, to her old gallery, to do the Broken Hearts gallery. And he says, I'm really happy for you. And she said she's never had a guy be happy for her. And I love that little moment with her and Nick. I think that leads into the monster and the human. They're sitting on this couch and she says, you know, we're good together. We did it. You know, the monster and the human. And she says that she's the monster and he's a human. And humans need monsters to stir things up. And monsters need humans to fix everything they break. It's simple science. I like that she's the way she sees their roles in things.
Yeah, but is that nice?
Yeah, well, because she's always messing things up.
But is that good? But so she's a monster?
Well, no, she knows. Like a clumsy monster that like kind of like break, like a cartoon monster.
Right, like not a an evil Sesame monster. Street.
Well, she's sort of like a whirlwind kind of a thing. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't think of it as like an evil monster.
Yeah. I didn't think of it as Sesame Street, but I guess I could see. I just don't know. I don't know. It didn't speak to me, but.
And it's funny because Marco, his friend, tells him, like, she's your knight in shining armor and you're the stupidest princess ever. And I love that twist on, you know, who's saving the day and who's the princess. I thought that was great. So I didn't have anything then until the ball, till the ending.
Yeah.
The ending.
Yeah.
The Leo ending. Yes. I can't believe you said that. Yeah. I cannot wait to hear more about why God. This is. First, I just want to say she looks amazing. Cannot even in that white suit. It reminded me of Kamala Harris. Yeah. And it's the suffragist color. Mm-hmm. And that's why she wore it. So I wondered if that was why she had chose that, but I don't know, but she looks amazing.
Yeah.
I love her speech, Lucy's speech about why she began collecting things. Mm-hmm. I had already had that scene where now we understand what the secret was, as we talked about at the beginning, that it was her mother mm-hmm. has Alzheimer's and is in a home and, you know, doesn't really remember her, right? And she says in this speech, I began collecting because I lost someone years ago. My mother is my first heartbreak. I thought I would forget and be forgotten. So I clung to things which kept me from moving forward. Heartbreak is the great equalizer. In the end, the thing that broke me also made me whole. Mm-hmm. And I love that.
Yeah.
So good. And then Nick arrives with his grand gesture. Yeah. As you said, he's running across the city. And all of this, I'll just say, we talked about a little bit in, oh my God, Boomerang, mm-hmm. about back and forth,
yes.
you know, that you really liked, like the back and forth between the two of them. And I love that about this too. You know, he comes running in. She's like, yeah, this is a bad time.
Yeah.
Like, this is a bad time for your grand gesture because I'm in the middle of making a really amazing speech and I look amazing. So just hold your phone, you know?
Yes, which is so Leo.
It's so Leo. She does it multiple times.
Yes, I know.
Where everything she does in this is she's being injecting humor or telling him to basically back off, like, this is my moment.
Yeah.
It's great. Yeah. No wonder I love this.
Yeah.
But then do you view his, I mean, I know we have this discussion about the big rom-com speech. I mean, is this his when he says the map is mine? Which, okay.
Yeah, well, I mean, she says, what are you doing? And he's like, what do you think? It's a grand gesture. I mean, I thought it was a little bit of like
identifies it.
Poking fun. Yeah, but also
it is. I think it is. I think it's
very endearing though.
And he says, the map was mine. I put the map in here. I said it was random. And he says, I met Chloe working at a hotel, fell in love, and she left me. And I promised myself I would never let anyone make me feel that again. Then I met you and put the map up because I wanted to see you again. Love makes you do crazy, stupid, irrational things. I love you.
Yeah.
And then he says again, I love you. She's just not saying anything. Not,
now is not the time.
Right. Exactly. That was great. She's like, yeah, I'm going to get back to my speech now. Mm-hmm. That's literally what she says back to him.
Yes, I know.
I know. But then I love that the crowd doesn't let her get away with this, you know?
Yeah.
They're all love him back. Yes. Love him back. That was the best.
Yeah.
Oh, I was laughing. And then, she goes, enough. Be quiet. Mm-hmm. You know, like, this is my moment. Yeah. She comes down the stairs in very dramatic fashion. This really is so Leo.
Yeah.
And then she says, I'm a lump of coal. I feel nothing. But he's got this big Broken Hearts Broken Hearts Hotel, like, neon sign. And she realizes, you know, that is the grand gesture. I mean, he changed the name of the hotel. And then she still is just like busting his chops. She's like, if I didn't do this, they would all turn on me. So this is for them.
Yeah.
And pulls him in and kisses him. But then she does show a softer side and says, you're the only person I didn't collect anything from. And he says, why is that? And she's like, because I love you too. Yeah. And that is truly genuine and sweet. But only after she basically made him work for it and crack jokes at his expense, which I thought was perfect.
Yeah.
And different.
Yes.
Right? Original.
Yes.
In execution of the sort of typical rom-com speeches.
Yeah.
Did you think about the criteria and whether or not what he said sort of meets our rom-com speech criteria? It's a pretty short speech on
his
part. Yes,
it is. And hers doesn't have anything to do with him. I mean, I thought their speeches were not about... Well, hers wasn't about love.
His was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hers.
Right.
Hers is about her damage, really.
Yes.
Like her wounds.
Exactly. But I did love that it, again, sort of pokes fun, but also just like, love makes you do crazy irrational things. And I guess what I'm trying to say is I love you. Like, that is the most honest you could be. I really liked that.
And another criteria was that they explain how they truly love the person. Mm. And I think he does. And you've already seen it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
That's the other thing.
Yeah.
You know that by the time we get to this point. I think that was one of our issues in the Happiest Season speech. Some things we felt like we didn't see enough of them together to feel it. Mm. So the words mattered. Whereas here, I genuinely already felt that.
Yeah.
It's same with Harry and Sally. Like, I know he does do the great list of, you know, all her quirks and things.
Yeah.
But you knew how Harry felt by the time he gets there.
Yeah, but he needed to say that because they had a really big falling out.
Yeah.
And I feel like it wasn't quite as big in this one. It was a little...
No, that's what I was going to say to you. I didn't feel like it was that big at all. So, and what did he really do that was so wrong? He just didn't tell her that it was named after Chloe,
even though
he tried to tell her.
No, he said, meet me at whatever.
Yeah, and then she wasn't there because he was with Chloe.
Right.
Yes.
And then she went to find him. Lucy went to find him and he was with Chloe.
He was with Chloe. Yep. But yes, but didn't, again, but versus like Marcus who slept with someone else.
No.
I mean, on the scale of quote unquote bad things, I didn't think this one was that bad, which is why I guess he doesn't need the big take responsibility.
No.
I'm sorry, I fucked up part,
yeah.
Which is the one criteria that I don't think it meets because I don't think it needs to. But I loved this ending. I mean, did you love this ending or is this just me? Because this is the Leo. Is this the Leo? I mean, just the dynamic between them I thought was great.
I thought it was the perfect ending for this movie. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't have done anything differently. I have no critique. It wasn't my favorite. It's just, you know, I think that little extra, the piece you relate to is the piece that pushes you over. And for me, I didn't have that, but I loved it. I loved it.
Yeah. And I guess we did talk about these, but the only other note I had about scenes was the confessionals. I was wondering, given, like you said, that that's a huge thing you love about When Harry Met Sally, what you thought of these here.
I mean, it's the opposite. So, like, I love hearing people, how they met or how they got together amongst the most impossible circumstances, or it's just sweet.
Coincidence.
And, yeah, it's sweet and and heartwarming. These were the opposite, I thought. So I didn't have like a favorite or anything like that. It's obviously served this movie very well, but it's just didn't like, it was fine.
I was not a huge fan of the in When Harry Met Sally. I mean, I like them, but they were never a big thing to me. Natalie Krinsky loves them, hence why she did her own version of them here. But they definitely serve the movie. I do love the last one where I love the, like with Harry Met Sally, it ends with the two of them having their own confessional scene.
I was going to talk about this in Damage, but the first was obviously, I love some hidden mommy issues here and totally different mommy issues than we're used to. And how she talks about in that last scene that she says her mother was her first heartbreak and she was afraid that she would end up like her, that she would forget and be forgotten. So I clung to things which kept me from moving forward. And that, I mean, I just don't think you could be any more clear and also unique and interesting with your Damage. I mean, that was right out there. And then the other piece of it to me was, and this was, I guess, sort of a question, and I guess you're going to say no, or I'm not sure. I just didn't like that last vignette because I feel like there was the suggestion that she was, that her holding on to things was part of her damage and that she was cured, not by Nick. I'm not suggesting that it's antiquated in that way, but she was cured. And then because she was cured, she didn't hold on to anything with Nick, which just didn't really resonate to me.
I did think it was part of her damage. I think I said that earlier, even without knowing your question.
But then she's cured. She says it in the last scene.
Yes, she says it. You're right. Yeah, that's why she didn't keep anything from him.
Yeah, because she loves him.
And then in this vignette, she says, we're never breaking up. And so there's nothing to hoard. I didn't think of it as she's cured. But I guess now that you're saying it like that, because cured sounds so ridiculous. You're never really cured of anything. Right. But
well, you can. You can grow out of it, grow past it. But I don't know. To me, that just didn't seem like damage. That seemed like something that was just part of who she was. She is someone who likes to commemorate and cares about those things and not to hold on to the heartbreak, but just to hold on to the memories. And
think is okay.
Right, I agree, but then she stops doing it.
Well, yeah, but if you're doing it for the reasons you just said, I think it's okay. I think she was also doing it, though, she's saying, because she was so afraid of being forgotten. Mm. And that does stem from her mother. Mm. And then in other relationships, she even says at one point after she'd run into Max again, she says to Nick, like, am I really that forgettable? And so I think there's the good side to her saving mementos, which you're describing, and then there's the damage side. Okay. And I think as long as she stays on the right side of the line, then...
But it doesn't seem like she is at all anymore. She doesn't keep anything. She kind of makes fun, which I thought was cute. She kind of pokes fun at him for doing it. Like, we don't need these things. We don't keep these things.
Yes, exactly. Because now we're going to have a future together, so I don't have to hold on to pieces from the past because I'm not afraid of losing you.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think...
Yeah, okay. I would have liked her. I liked Sally. Didn't change in that way. That's who she is. She's very particular. And she found someone who accepts her so fully for who she is, even when it drives him nuts. So the last vignette was them together, like all the other couples, and them saying, we got married. We had a coconut cake, which not everybody likes. We also had chocolate and we had raspberry sauce and we had it on the side because it can make it very dry. I don't know. It felt like that was still who she was and they were in it together. I wish that she had been like, and here's our box with Nick. And Nick was like, oh yeah, look at this. Like, I don't know. I wish I was more of a, it was a role reversal. Different. I liked it. Really smart, really original. I have no criticism. It's just not for me. I'm just not what I would have wanted.
Although it's interesting because if you take out the last vignette part, I mean, the
one thing. Yeah, I know. That's why the I'd last vignette kind along, of ruined it for me.
I was going to say, because the one thing I would say all along is, like Sally, that she remains like unabashedly herself. She says to Nick, like, I showed you exactly who I was. And she doesn't change who she is. you know, that's, I was going to talk about this a little bit in the takeaway, but that's one thing Natalie Krinsky was like adamant about, that, that she created a character that by the end, he loves her, not because she's weird or for who, and for her weirdness and her quirkiness, not just in spite of it, and that she remains true to herself. And I would say that, and I was going to say that, but now you're saying, if you throw in that last vignette, are you taking from that she did change in a way?
Yeah. I mean, the whole movie was about her holding on to those things. And so at the end, she's like, I don't hold on to them.
Because I guess it was holding on to the unhealthy parts.
Totally get that. Totally get that.
Yeah. So what she said, are we at what she said?
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Natalie Krinsky.
The more I read about her, the more I loved her and the story. And I just found it fascinating.
Yes.
And the thing I was most focused on was this script was on the blacklist. And the blacklist is not the list of writers that were barred from the McCarthy era. It's part of the
Hollywood.
Yeah, I know.
I had to look it up.
Yeah.
I kind of knew what it was, but I did have to double check.
Yeah. But although allegedly it is kind of a wink and a nod to that time. But this blacklist that Krinsky was on in 2011 with the Broken Heart Gallery script, this was something that started in 2005. And it's a very insider's achievement where the script is named one of the most buzzed about or clamored for unproduced scripts. I found out about this last year, 2019, when Jessica Knowles' Till Death landed on the blacklist, which I was very excited about, but I didn't know what it was. It doesn't mean that the script will necessarily get made because Hollywood is so fickle, and or in like in this case, it doesn't mean it won't be made anytime soon, but it is, it's such an honor that it is a real calling card that opens tons of doors in Hollywood. And Krinsky's 2011 blacklist placement got her writing on Gossip Girl and Grey's Anatomy, two of my personal favorites. She's also writing now two movies that I die for, because an adaptation of Gillian Flynn, my idol, her short story, The Grown Up. And then the second one that she set to direct, which she describes as essentially what would happen if my mother and I were on a crime spree a la Thelma and Louise. And I'm like, a buddy movie with mommy issues. I don't even, if that is not in our wheelhouse.
Do you even know the name?
No,
what is this?
No, we need to. She's writing it and directing it. It hasn't gone into production yet. She just had a baby, so.
She's also producing, I thought you were going to say this one, she's going to act as a producer on the Warner's big screen adaptation of Britt Bennett's first novel, The Mothers.
Yes, I did.
She's not going to direct that, but that's another big project.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, she is 2011 to 2021. She is like one of those long overnight successes that has been 10 years in the making, which I love those stories. They are so heartening to me.
It really is. And with this one, I mean, I'm sure you read. I mean, it's just like you said, it was on the blacklist, and this No Trace Camping, a Canadian American production company, came to her and said, you know, we want to make your movie. And she's like, what? Like, haha, like, that's cute, but come on. Like, it had been years, you know? And they said, oh, you know, it'll just be a quick rewrite. And she said, that's like, to a filmmaker, like having to look back on something you wrote 5 or 6 years ago, she'd rather be buried alive than read something she wrote 6 years ago.
Yes.
And there's no such thing as a quick rewrite. Mm-hmm. So she knew that it was just a huge amount of work. But then they said, you know, would you ever want to direct it? And she thought she was going to have to, you know, prove her chops. And what do you need me to do? Should I make a real? And they just looked at her and said, well, just say yes. You mean, you know what this movie is.
Yeah.
Just do it.
Yeah.
And she said, I remember that this was the quote I loved. Thank you for letting me know what it feels like to be a straight white guy. I will absolutely take you up on this opportunity. Like, this never happens.
Yeah.
Like, to your point, not such a long road, but then also, oh, hey, and here, direct it while you're at it.
Oh, yeah, that was my quote. But there's a little piece after, maybe I read a different interview. She said, well, thank you for letting me know what it feels like to be a straight white guy. I accept this challenge on the basis of nothing. Because she had directed...
Awesome. Exactly. Nothing.
She said she had directed nothing. She had never even directed traffic across the street, she said.
That's amazing.
Yeah. But she said it was the most magical, incredible, life-changing changing experience, truly, which I also loved that. But yeah, I mean, the fact of the matter is she wasn't being asked to direct something that she didn't know. She knew this material inside and out for years and years. This is a story that was so close to her heart and her mind. So, of course, it seemed like a reasonable thing that she could be able to direct it. But that's just not generally the way it goes.
Yeah, particularly, as you said, with someone who's never directed anything before. That's taking a big risk from their part.
I know, but is it? It shouldn't be. It shouldn't be.
Yeah. You're right. Yeah. It shouldn't be. Because you're right. It is her vision. And they run with it.
She also said, I'll be the urban legend that floats around. We should just start treating each other like straight white guys, and then the rest of the world will follow suit. And I kind of loved it, this subversive idea that reminded me of Alyssa Cole. When we interviewed her, I had read it in a Washington Post article that she had written, where she made a parallel to princesses. And she says, the main conversation around princesses in fiction has largely been reduced to slogans like, forget princess, I want to be a scientist. This well-intentioned and reductive argument itself ignored the fact that real princesses possess other skills and ambitions outside of being royalty. We were told that wanting to see ourselves in fantasies replete with ball gowns and crowns was regressive, ignoring that many of us, those of us who weren't white and straight, had never been allowed to consider ourselves princess material in the first place. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a parallel to what Natalie is saying here. We want to be given an opportunity to do something on a healthy dose of faith, rather than having to prove every single aspect of worthiness before being given the chance. And I feel like it's not a bad thing to think we should just act like straight white guys in this regard, because for so long they were like, sure, you know this material, you did it, sure, go ahead, direct it, that makes sense. But for women, it's like, well, what can you do? Do a commercial, then do a short, and then do an indie thing, and then do this, and then maybe we'll give you a budget thing later. And it's like, why? Right. That's not how men...
Exactly. They don't have to go through that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I loved that.
Wow, that's perfect. I mean, it kind of goes... So I had that one too, but I do have another one, which I saw on her Instagram page. I don't know if you did any trolling on there like
me. No, I did not.
But the movie launched on Labor Day, I think I said earlier, and at the time she was raising a four-year-old and pregnant with her second child, and her baby came a month early, literally the same week as the movie launch. Mm-hmm. And the picture she posted is like so many, so... we've all seen of women after giving birth in the hospital. She's in the hospital bed. She's wearing the, you know, the gown, the newborn baby's like right next to her, this tiny little thing, and her hair is in a bun and she's on the phone. She does not look glamorous. I'm not saying those people, I don't understand the people that have makeup on and look gorgeous. She just looks like, you know, a woman who's just given birth basically. And she says in the caption, launching Broken Hearts Gallery this week, and then in parentheses, a month early, accidentally launched a baby. This little fucker didn't get the memo about 2020 and just wanted to get here. But moral of this story, ... She puts this in all caps, hire more female filmmakers because they can do everything backwards in whatever shoes they choose to wear during a global pandemic. Mm-hmm. Just thought that was awesome. I'm like, look at that. Like, yeah, I listened to two podcasts where she had said, oh, I just had a baby a day ago. I just had a baby 2 days ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, she launched this movie after literally launching a baby. And I loved that. Hire more female filmmakers because they can do everything.
I love
it. It was great. I love her. Like I said, it seems like you mentioned a bunch of the stuff she's going to be doing. I think she's going to be around for a long time. And I'm excited to follow her now.
Yes.
See where it goes.
Totally.
So who won the movie for you?
Oh, my God. This isn't even close.
Oh, what is it?
It was the music.
Oh, I love it.
The music. I've literally listened to that Ingrid Michaelson song. Every day since I listened to it. Literally every day.
I love it.
The end song is Young and in Love.
Yeah.
But it's not just that. There's a Sweet But Psycho, Ava Max, always a favorite. Mm-hmm. Blackbird by Kinley. Mm-hmm. Love Everything I Wanted by Billie Eilish. What Is My Love? Mm-hmm. Wild Yaks, the Big Thief song, Masterpiece, First Love by Mitski. The whole thing just
It's so good. When I heard the Billie Eilish song, I'm like, ooh, yeah. I know Corinne's going to like this part.
Oh, my God. And those were like the easy ones. I mean, there were so many deep cuts that I was like, oh, my God, this is so good. The music additions were so good. Loved it. Definitely won the movie.
Love it. Well, mine is, again, an unoriginal choice. It's Geraldine Viswanathan, sure. though.
Yeah.
I did not know her before. I know that she's been in other things that people have followed. I had never seen her before. I did read, I think, that she's in every scene in this movie. Mm. And that's probably true now that I think about it. But like I said earlier, I just felt like when she was on screen, there was just, I don't know, there was like an inner glow. Like she was lit up from inside. And I thought she killed it as Lucy. And yeah, totally. So that's who won it for me.
Yes, agreed.
So takeaways.
My takeaway was something I had alluded to earlier, that I just didn't kind of understand the concept of this movie. Again, it's not that I've never had my heart broken, because I have. It's not that I've never had someone like me when I've liked them, because I have. But I don't know. I'm kind of a move on and I don't dwell on it. I think you had called me out for Love Actually. And you're like, I just don't get unrequited love. Just move on. If the person doesn't like you,
you did
stop.
Say that.
Like, I don't understand. But with this movie, I think I realized something about myself that I had never noticed before, which is really always like such a big deal, right?
Yes.
I think I mourn certain things. And I say certain things because in some things, I'm the complete opposite. But I think I mourn certain things, especially romantic relationships, before they're over. I mourn them as they're falling apart. Like as things are getting bad, I'm just as present in those as the blissful moments. I don't hold on to like whatever was good in the beginning of the relationship because now it's bad. And so I'm like, you know, are things great? Then it's great. Does it suck? Nope, then I'm out. So at the point, and obviously there's always good. I mean, a relationship doesn't usually turn 100% bad one day. There's always something good. But it's when the bad clearly outweighs the good, that's when it's just over. I think I'm like a love simpleton a little bit. I don't know. Like...
Like, I don't think so. I don't think you're a simpleton anything. So.
I don't know. I think for my emotions of love, I think I am though. And it's just like, but my point was, by the time I've fully processed that it's over, it's the first time that it's outwardly over. And at that point, I'm already ready to move on. So maybe if the other person, obviously, I mean, I think I'm in a relationship with someone else, but we've known, and I think I talked about this in Love Actually too, people think they're in the same relationship and they're not in the same relationship. They're not communicating. They're not going through the same things at all. So I think by the time the relationship's over, I'm already ready for the next thing because I've already processed that this has been in the shitter for a really long fucking time and we tried to give it a go again and we break up and we get back together or we fight and we say, let's change this. And if it's not going to happen, it's not going to happen. And so I'm just out. And it just made me see a connection that I hadn't seen before. It kind of flipped this idea of beginnings, middles, and ends for me on its head. Because I guess someone else's end is really my beginning. Like I've already processed this. I've already mourned it. I've already gone through it. I've already done it. By the time the relationship is quote unquote over.
Oh, it's their end and your beginning.
Yes.
But you've never been like Lucy is saying, take the one with Max. You're saying she should have seen, I mean, we don't see enough of their relationship, but by the time she sees him with the ex and she's making that speech on stage and embarrasses herself or whatever. Yeah. We're assuming that leading up to that, there were things that she wasn't seeing about how this was already going bad and she should have seen that and then not been surprised.
I've never had that happen to me. No. I imagine that people who date me have felt that way, but I don't know how does he just show up with an ex?
That was going to be my next question.
Yeah, how does he just show up with an ex and she's like, what? What do you mean, what? How do you not know? know anything. Like, you don't suspect anything's off, or
you don't know about exes. You don't ask about exes. We know that too from another.
Yeah, but
episode.
You don't have to know what's going on now. Like, I'm assuming he distanced me. There was, and I didn't know you'd ask that specific question, but I do remember she, like, her friends were like, "Well, did he do this?" And she's like, "I didn't think that was weird." And like, wait, all of that doesn't make sense. Like, of course.
Yeah, she was ignoring signs.
Yes.
Yeah, people do that all the time.
Yeah, I know. But people generally like to pretend the signs they were ignoring were very subtle and low-key. And meanwhile, I'm like, are you kidding
After
me?
After the fact.
They were big red flags. Yeah.
So you're saying you see these things.
Yeah. And then I assume the other person does too, because that's why we've started fighting. That's why you're pulling away. That's why I'm pulling away. Whatever it is, like, whatever's happening, that's why it's happening. Mm-hmm. Because this isn't going well.
But then maybe the other person believes you can fix that, and then instead you dump them.
I mean, I think we have to both.
Or it ends.
We have to go both give it a go to try to fix it. I mean, I've never one day woken up and been like, it's over.
Of course.
Never. I'm not a ghoster at all. I'm definitely like a, let's try to fix this 500 times, make up, break up.
But maybe not when you were younger, were you?
Oh, totally. Oh, yeah.
You were like, let's try to fix it.
Volatile is the way I see it now. But absolutely, makeup, breakup. There was so much warning for any of my exes. So I really, I in that way, I don't have a lot of sympathy. But I guess to some people, and this is what I'm saying, when it's over, like that's when they fully start to process that it's over. And I started to process it when things weren't good for the first
part. This is making me think of Exile by Taylor Swift and
Whatever.
Yeah. Like I gave so many signs. I never saw the signs. They just, one person felt like they were showing all the signs and they were saying, here are the issues, here's what we need to do. And the other person is saying, like, basically you were never clear. And that other person, to your point, it seems like is the one who just realized now that it's over.
Yeah.
But the other one was like, but I've been saying this. What are you talking about? Where have you been?
Yeah.
Right? And now you're surprised I'm with a new guy so fast.
Well, yeah.
She's sort of like, well, yeah, because it was over.
A long time ago. We tried.
It wasn't 5 minutes ago.
We tried to make it work, but we've been fighting for a long time, or this has been bad for a long time.
Taylor is right.
Yeah. Although, I like the way you positioned it, because sometimes, I mean, I love that musically, I love that song musically, but there are other parts of the song lyrically that I love, but I always really hated that because I'm like, I'm not a big signs person. I don't think people should be reading signs. I'm talking about fighting and saying, you don't do this, this isn't working for me. You know, the other person saying to me, this isn't working, whatever it is. I'm talking about actual communication. I'm not talking about like smoke signals. I'm talking about, but I don't understand what happens when I think something's slowly deteriorating and someone is like, but wait, I thought we were still together. I'm like, well, just be
right. Or I don't see what you're saying. Or I'm not.
Yeah. No, I've never had anyone do that either. It's always, we always know it's not good. But then somehow the end is still abrupt.
Surprising
to them. Not to me. And by then I'm already over.
People hold out hope. Or they don't, like you said, they don't want to see. And so then they do feel like they got hit by a ton of bricks.
Totally.
And you're saying, I don't know, those bricks have been there. I have no idea what you're talking about.
But this movie really made me understand it in a different way. I'm like, so this is the part in the movie where you think it's over. And meanwhile, this is the beginning for me. And the end started way before. It's not that I skip endings, or it's not that I don't have to process the pain or the heartache or the anything, but I just do it while we're still together. And I'm thinking, like, is this going to work? Are we going to be able to do this? This is what I need from you. This is what I can give you. This is what I can't give you. All of those things. And so I just don't understand how by the time it's over, it's the real ending. But I see it here. I see it.
But now...
Yeah,
now you see it. Yeah. All right. Thanks to Lucy and Nick and Natalie Krinsky. My takeaway is, I don't know that it's much of a takeaway, but it is something I wanted to talk about, which is how much I love rom-coms and how much we love rom-coms. Yes. And I did want to talk just about what I listened to Natalie Krinsky sort of talk about what she loves about the genre generally. which kind of made me think, I don't know that we've ever talked about what it is, you know, each of us loves about a rom-com, and then specifically what we love about this one in terms of what we might use or whatnot. And I listened, like I said, to something that she said about why she loved it. And she said that she's always been a fan and that there is something about the elixir of watching two people fall in love. But because we need to build anticipation and can't act on it immediately, there is this sort of yearning that brings us in that way. And I was thinking about that. I mean, there's definitely the elixir of watching two people fall in love. I definitely think that's an appeal to me of the rom-com. I love that aspect, of course. But this yearning, like they take different takes, but there is always some obstacle, of course, to them getting together. And there is this anticipation because they can't act on it for whatever reason or whatever the roadblock is. So this idea of like this yearning that you have that sort of brings you in. And that really spoke to me. I do think that that's something that I love about it. Maybe it's anticipation, yearning, whatever word you want. But the will they or won't they, even though you know where it's going. I mean, it's not like in a rom-com, generally, there's, you know, what the ending is going to be, that they will be together. But that I thought was very interesting way to describe it. I don't know that I've ever really thought, though, generally, what it is I love about rom-com. So, I mean, I like what she's saying, but I was thinking, I don't know. I feel like we should talk about it.
I prefer a rom-com that is more about their own obstacles. Like, I don't necessarily like, I don't prefer the ones that are like all the obstacles are set out and then at the end they're just together. I yes. like more of a normal people where the obstacles are one another, and it's like it has more of an undertone, although not at all, because it's very light and about love and warm, and but it has an undertone of more of like a thriller or like a like, will they get through this? Like, will they, like, I like a fight. I love a good fight. I love a good makeup. Ooh, yeah. I love people screwing up and having to figure it out and make it better. And will one accept it? Will they do enough? Will they be able to, you know, get past this? I love that back and forth. Those are the kind of obstacles I love that are essentially themselves getting in each other's way.
Yes. Oh, I love a good fight too. We got to write one of those.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm just wondering, were there a lot of fight? Like, so no fights in this.
Oh, no.
No. Boomerang, definitely. Justified.
Yes. Always Be My Maybe. They have yes. to fight when she's up yep. on the balcony. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love that one. That's like, I think of that more as Sasha's speech, yeah. but it was right after the fight scene prior.
Yeah.
Because he didn't want to yep. go to the.
Oh, yeah. And he's like, you're a sellout. Yeah. And whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, that was a good fight. We liked that fight.
Uh-huh. I did. What else?
Sleeping with other people? Is there any fights?
No.
I want to figure out what we like and don't like. I do like in this that this is very much about Lucy's own journey too. I mean, she says she tried to make a feminist take on a rom-com, that this really is, yes, about her falling in love and dealing with, you know, her damage and the breakups, but it is also about her finding her voice, like on a professional level. And that part of the story is, I don't know, I would say equally important, and that it's really Lucy's story.
I totally see that and love that for you. That's also like Always Be My Maybe, I think, is very much like that too.
Yes.
But I am all Sally Rooney. I am all the individual doesn't even exist. Like, it's all relational.
But I feel like you can do both.
I don't know.
She can be coming to realizations about herself and her professional journey or whatever things about herself personally or professionally, but also you're going to be having some of this come out in relation to the other person as well, don't you think? I mean, you can mix those two things.
I guess you're saying though, but you're saying like, I was saying too, Always Be My Maybe and Broken Hearts Gallery are both.
Yeah. It can't we mix? Can't you have both those
things? Mean, you can. Yeah. They obviously did.
Yeah.
I'm not drawn to those stories. But I think that's why I think we should join forces because I think we got the best of both.
That's the beauty of the two characters too, the two points of view. Oh, we can mix them all the best elements.
Yeah.
We love a good rom-com here.
Always.
Set it in New York and we're definitely in.
Definitely.
All a variation of When Harry Met Sally.
I know. I want more of them. I would take more of them. I want all of them. Yes. I don't want anyone to say that's been done. I literally want every version. I want every single person's version of When Harry Met Sally. Thank you.
Yes. Amen. We want to let you know we've launched a Patreon page where supporters can receive perks like bonus episodes and exclusive content.
Because Pop Fiction Women is our passion project, a place where we give women space to show up and offer in-depth analysis in the ways we're used to hearing about male creators and their characters.
We delve into creativity and psychology with a dash of astrology, and we have so much fun doing it. Just two friends breaking down books, movies, and shows like Normal People, Fleabag, and I May Destroy You.
Every single aspect of this podcast we do ourselves, from the preparation to the recording, from the editing to the social media promotion. So we're adding a Patreon platform because we want to keep making the show you love and hopefully expand it even further.
So please consider becoming one of our most complicated fans and contributing on Patreon.
To learn more, go to patreon.com/popfictionwomen.
This has been Pop Fiction Women with Corinne and Kate.
If you enjoyed this show, please tell the complicated women in your life.
And the men who love them.
Yes, tell them to listen. And then to follow on Spotify or review and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. And of course, share on social media.
Tag us with your favorite books, TV shows and movies starring complicated women on Facebook and Instagram at Pop Fiction Women or on Twitter at Pop_Women.
For more coverage of the women you love or to find out if you qualify as a complicated woman, go to popfictionwomen.com.
And keep it complicated.